Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing from a guy that grew up in a small town of 2,000 people in New York State and found a way not only to start investing in multifamily, but become a nationally recognized leader in the multifamily space, you are going to want to hear what Jake Stenziano has to say. That's right. We have Jake Stenziano from Jake and Gino on with us today. Jake and Gino have written two books, have a podcast, a blog. They hold an annual conference. They have mentoring programs. They built a vertically integrated management company and rehab company. You name it, these guys just go after it. Before we jump into the intro, it was only 3 years ago when I started to invest in multifamily syndications. I didn't know how it worked, and I didn't know how to get involved. Now I know, and I want to share some of my tips on how to get started with you. If you go to my website at darrenbatchelder.com, I have a free PDF for you. It's my five-step process for passively investing in real estate. Check it out, and I hope it helps. Now, on to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Jake Stenziano before we start the show. Jake lives in Chattanooga, Tennessee with his wife and two young children. Jake and Gino closed on their first deal in 2013 and have been off to the races since. Jake and Gino own over 1,500 units, and the investors that they've helped mentor have collectively purchased over 9,000 units. I've heard from others before meeting Jake, and it was very apparent, both on and off mic, that Jake is extremely transparent and just a good guy. A guy you can relate to. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. I welcome you guys today. We've got a very special guest. We've got Jake Stenziano with us. Jake, appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So how Jake and I know each other, actually, Jake is the first person on the show that I have not met with personally. But Jake, if you're in the multifamily world, you have heard of Jake and Gino. If you have not, if you're not in the multifamily world, you may not have, but Jake and Gino, they are very well known in the multifamily industry. We're going to talk about a lot of different services that they provide, but they're just leaders in the space. So we're excited to have Jake on today. And, you know, to start out with, Jake, could you just share high level how many units you are currently invested in?
The mark of the beast, 1,666.
Fantastic.
Kind of freaks me out a little bit. We're waiting to either buy something or sell something and get off that.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird time right now, right? So, you know, it's a good time to sell at times, but it's tough finding good deals. It's been a seller's market for a while now.
It's an interesting point because we've only closed on 100 units this year. And it was two, like, you know, 50 unit deals. And it's just because it's the only thing that we've seen that makes sense. And it's relatively close to other assets that we own. The one we just bought, we paid cash for it just to be more competitive and make it work. We picked it up for 40 a door. So I know those
40 a door. I don't know. I'm in the Dallas market. Yeah. You know, we're pushing 90, 100 a door, even over 100 a door on a lot of the nicer deals. I don't know what your market typically is, but
yeah, no, that's still cheap. And so we bought a shell, a mid-80s build, and it was coming off of a USDA contract. So it's those kind of, you know, we're going to clear the rest of it out. There's, you know, less than 50% occupancy right now, upgrade all the units, and then, you know, we'll have a nice asset, especially when you're talking about replacement costs. So that's the kind of stuff we're seeing right now. And you're talking about football earlier when we got on. It's just you got to take what the defense gives you right now. And we're still looking for value, but we don't want to get crazy with it. So
absolutely. I mean, it's a smart approach. So, yeah. Hey, we'll get into some more of the details on the multifamily side, but I do want to hit up on, you know, just you guys offer a ton of different things to the people that want to get in the space. So I just want to hit high level on some of those areas, and then we could delve in, you know, deeper into some pockets. But, you know, one, you guys have written two books. So one book was Wheelbarrow Profits, and I just got involved in multifamily about 3 years ago, and your book was one of the books that I actually read to educate myself. So I really appreciate you guys spending the time to put that out. I've talked to a lot of people that have done books, and that first book I've heard can be a beast in terms of just time consuming and very difficult to get out. So I could tell you from my personal perspective that I'm thankful that I had a resource like yours to turn to. So thank you.
Well, you know, from being a C student most of my life, at least in high school before I got into college, and despising academics and whatnot, it definitely was not the easiest thing, or, you know, right in my wheelhouse of love, if you will, doing the things that you love to do. But we documented our journey, and that's what made it easier. We're sort of documenting our rehabs, how we're buying things. And it comes back to the three-legged framework: buy right, manage right, and finance right. And I truly believe that that represents multifamily and successful multifamily deals to the fullest. Sometimes folks overcomplicate it, but you look, you once you buy it, you're stuck. That's fixed. Once you finance it, usually we're financing for a minimum of 10 years. The only thing after that is the management play, and we dive into, you know, our different parameters. And clarity helps entrepreneurs so much. And from my time being an entrepreneur, I know that clarity is so important. And just writing that book gave us more clarity on our process, if you will, as some of an operations manual at times. So it helped. It was not easy, you know, to your point, but I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you impacted so many other people. I mean, this is the first time we've ever talked. And, you know, 3 years ago, I read your book and I kind of felt like I knew you guys a little bit. And it also provided me a ton of information, you know, breaking into the space. So I appreciate that. You mentioned entrepreneurs. So what did you do before buying apartments?
Yeah, so my background is I grew up in a really small town in Western New York. It was about, you know, less than 2,000 people, and there was a factory that made chairs. A lot of my family were cops, and there was the teachers, you know, there was a central school. So I just did not have much exposure to, you know, business owners, entrepreneurs, if you will. So I had a lot of limiting beliefs around that growing up. And, you know, basically my grandparents said, hey, why don't you try to, you know, become a state trooper? And yeah, I failed the psych exam, so that wasn't working. I played football most of my life, so I thought, hey, okay, I'm going to become a gym teacher and coach football. Man, that was a mistake. I remember going to the city schools.
Did you do that first?
I literally went to school to get a phys ed degree, and I'm going out to the public schools in Rochester, New York, and I'm thinking to myself, this is like glorified babysitter. And I'm sitting there, these kids, it was literally time to play flag football. I have this vivid memory burned into my head. And I'm trying to pull these kids off the bleachers to go outside and play flag football, and they won't get changed. They don't want to do it. And I just was like, this sucks. What am I doing? And so I remember a few weeks passed, and I was driving home from my parents' house. I called my dad and I said, look, you know, I don't know what to do. I had sort of one of these epiphany moments. I said, I can't do this anymore. And at the time, I was doing a 100% commission sales job at Radio Shack. And my dad's in the medical industry. Said, hey, let me set you up with some of these pharmaceutical reps. And literally this guy that I met with from Amgen gave me the playbook of how to get into pharmaceutical sales. And he said, here's a pitch book. And you put this together, you document your sales success. He said, I need you to finish your degree, go out and get 1 year of sales experience outside business to business sales. I just did everything the guy told me to do. I literally created the pitch book, documented my sales success, went out and got a job selling business to business cell phones, got three promotions within a year, and then started applying and landed a job with a top three pharmaceutical manufacturer. It was funny too, because right at the time that I was getting hired, I had a job offer from another company that was not as reputable. And I did not have the offer from the company I went with on the table. And I rolled the dice and, you know, I told the one company no. I held out for the better position, which was scared the shit out of me at the time. But it was probably,
but it worked out, right?
It worked out though. Sometimes you got to roll the dice on these things and go with your gut. So I did that. And then it was like, man, I hit the nail on the head. I thought I was in the best job ever. I was 25 years old, had a company car, making six figures. And I was doing something that I enjoyed with a bunch of guys around me that were energetic and probably, I think most of them were college athletes. So I was like, oh, this makes sense. There's a lot of competition. I love the sales aspect of it. But then healthcare reform hits and everything came crashing down. The industry completely got flipped upside down. It was no longer fun. It was just a bureaucratic mess. They wanted you to read off a script. It just completely changed. And at the same time, what you saw were all these doctors losing their autonomy to medical groups. So not only were the pharmaceutical reps getting crushed, the doctors were all, you know, combining together into these medical groups, basically going from entrepreneurs that ran small practices, maybe 5-10 employees, to becoming employees themselves. So you see this massive shift in healthcare. And I thought I stepped in and I was in a great spot to, oh shit, what am I going to do? Now the company starts doing layoffs every year. I was with them for about 3 or 4 more years.
Oh, wow.
And it was right around Christmas time. They'd say, hey, sit by the phone.
What time frame was this?
So years. this was 2012. And
2012, okay.
No, I'm sorry. The healthcare reform started in 2008. I got into real estate in 2011 when I started first looking at deals, but we didn't close on anything until February 2013. But it was interesting because the one doctor in the community that retained his autonomy in his private practice, I became very close with. And I was trying to understand why literally every doctor except for one in my entire area joined a medical group. And so I started asking questions because it just didn't make any sense. And it turned out this guy owned real estate all up and down the East Coast and retained his autonomy because he wanted to, not because he was loving the money or it was so great or anything, but he was real estate first. And he did, his medical group, he volunteered with the firefighters, did all this great charitable work. And that really left an impression on me. And so I started, asking, hey, what do you think I should do? Started to pick his brain a little bit because we got friendly. And he said,
right.
The best advice I can give you is go buy a duplex and rent half of it right now. And he said, that's what I did when I got out of college. Best advice I didn't take. I never took that advice, but it still left an impression on me. But so I'm in New York and I see that, one of my friends, Gino. So I did all my catering through this place called Gino's Trattoria for the pharmaceutical company. I was very good friends with Gino's brother, Marco. And basically, I'm seeing these guys. I'm looking up to them. They have a business. I think it's really cool that they're, entrepreneurs or whatever. And their taxes are like $30,000 on their house. And I'm sure you're very well, familiar with the taxes in New York State, but I mean, they shake you down, man. It's no joke. I mean, taxes are real in New York. So I started saying to myself, this was 2010. I got out in 2011. There's got to be something else out there. I hear there's like places with no state income tax. I know there's better weather, lower property taxes. And people are like, nah, you're crazy. They're going to get you one way or another. There's no escaping it. So I literally started this spreadsheet. I went down and I found places like Florida, Texas, Tennessee that had no state income tax. And then I started to rank them by property taxes. And I noticed that, wow, Tennessee looks pretty good. And there was a job opening with my company in East Tennessee. And so I was talking to my wife at the time, trying to figure things out. And I said, let me just take this chance. There's a job opening in Knoxville. Let me see what we can do. And she's like, no. I finally worked her over for like a week. And she's like, let me try it. She's like, fine. The hiring manager's from New Jersey. He's like, Jake, I get it. I understand. I did the same thing 20 years ago. So fortunately enough, he put me through the ringer and on the craziest job interview of my life. But long story short, I ended up landing that. And
you moved down to Knoxville. Did you bring your family with you right away? Or did
no.
You go
and this was the craziest shit. So I went down by myself for like 6 months and became this closet weirdo hermit because I thought there was going to be like some culture shock and everyone was like, oh, you got to just make sure there's Southern hospitality. And this is like all like my New York friends in Westchester telling me this shit, right? Filling my head with caca. And so I was like, oh, hey. And I thought I had to like talk slower. And I was always like really minding my manners and things like this. And I just was like not like connecting with anyone. It was because I was acting like a weirdo. And then 6 months later, my wife moves down and she starts making all these friends like this. And I'm like, oh, just be yourself. Stop being an idiot. And so that took a little bit of a transition period. But ultimately, I was looking for deals the minute I got down here. And I just didn't understand that I was really the salesperson, not the broker. And I was going in I was like, okay, you're the sales guy. Show me what you got. Let me get some things going. But realistically, as a multifamily investor, you need to cater to your brokers, not the other way around, because they're going to bring you deals that can change your life. And I remember so many times early on, I was just kind of hard charging. Hey, let's get this done, too aggressive, and was not building enough rapport. And I even got thrown out of a broker's office once. He's like,
did you really?
He's like, y'all are never going to do business down here. And he's like, get out of here. I was like, what the hell's going on, man? So we needed to course correct a little bit and finally built a relationship with a local broker and got a 25 unit deal done. But no one else wanted it. It was in a good area, but it was rough. I mean, late 60s build, septics, roofs were shot. I mean, you name it, this thing was beat. And
what about the occupancy? Was it low occupancy also?
No, it was great occupancy with weekly renters that were paying cash. Oh, really? And I remember that first night so vividly. I went around collecting cash because I literally started managing it myself. I had this wad of cash and I plunked it down on the dresser when I got home, and it just it reeked of cigarettes, the sweetest smell of tobacco in my life. I'm like, oh my God, I'm a business owner now. So that was like, a very pivotal moment in my life. The problem was after that, the cash started drying up. Literally, like, everyone's like, oh, new ownership. And they paid on that first week. And then it got worse and worse. And so there were so many learning lessons from that first deal. One, don't take cash, right? But that's what the prior owners were doing. Don't do weekly renters. They weren't screening anyone. I mean, we just literally started building our management company from the ground up on that first deal. And learned everything not to do, except for one thing. And the best thing we learned on that deal was that mom and pop ownership group actually charged something called a move-in fee. And a lot of people do security deposits, this, that, and the other thing. But we adopted that from day one, and it has been a tremendous revenue generator for our apartment. So we do a $450 move-in fee, and we don't do a security deposit. And so it kind of takes that tension out of the relationship from the beginning, because everyone's always wondering, am I going to get the security deposit back?
Right.
We're expanding our offices onto one of our campuses right now. And we have a rental right now for our actually back office. And we're closing that down. And I'm even going through it right now. So we just did this nice build out for our back office. And we're closing down the current back office, which we rent. And I'm saying, oh, I know they had a dartboard up, and I know they stained the carpet over there. Shit, we got to get in and clean it up. But this is that kind of that rub that goes on between renters and owners every day, where the move-in fee takes that out of the mix. In addition to that, we do a sure bond. So we have additional coverage.
What is that?
The sure bond. So it's like it's a bond that you can buy for $87.50. And there's different kinds where you have a pool, some have no pool. Where basically they buy a bond, so if they mess the place up, there's coverage there, and then they're actually connected with the collections agency as well. So it's like a system, simplifies the process and gives additional coverage for the landlord in case someone really messes stuff up.
But gotcha. So we do something similar. We don't call it a move-in fee, but we have an admin fee rather than the.
Yep, I've seen it.
Deposits. Yeah. We don't do the sure bond. So, if somebody messes up the unit, it's on us to clean it up and rehab it. But hey, you talked about a few things that I want to hit on. One was early on, you mentioned limiting beliefs. And, there's some people that are listening that, they're people that are out there and they're searching and they're reading and they're listening to podcasts and they're, they've heard that term over and over again and they understand it, limiting beliefs. But then there's other people that are like, what does he mean by that? Right. So help us understand, what does that mean, limiting beliefs, and kind of how do you change yours?
Yeah. Fortunately for myself, I have a partner mentor. So my partner, Gino, was the guy that kind of pushed me over the limiting belief hurdle, if you will, early on. I didn't even I didn't really even heard the term. But when I started, you know, working with my partner, Gino, he made me aware of it. He's kind of a Tony Robbins disciple. And that's where a lot of the limiting beliefs come from. Right. But for Gino, he was a chef. And he always had this limiting belief of, oh, I'm a chef, you know, investors won't take me seriously. I'm not a multifamily investor, you know, I'm a chef. And he always had that kind of, it was like almost a stigma around him. So that's where he struggled. And he talked about it with me openly. And I was like, wow, it's pretty cool. Cause I wasn't always the most open or would share like feelings or discuss things like that. And as time went on, and I remember, you know, having different conversations with Gino and him struggling with this, I started thinking to myself, you know, and this was cause we worked 18 months together before we got our first deal. I just couldn't really see myself or believe that I could be a business owner. I mean, my right. first job that I ever had, I worked at a Christmas tree farm and it was $3.25 an hour, but they gave you soup and sandwich for lunch. Okay, so, you know, growing up in Western New York, it's very depressed. I've worked for UPS. I worked for United Truck Rentals. You want to talk about a shit job, man. You get in, start moving people's houses. Everyone hates moving. God, hats off to those guys. And okay. I remember summers just looking at the back of these trucks, thinking you were getting close to the end. And then there's like that little hump that goes over the cab and you right. got another like 6 feet to go. So that, you know, you talk about finding out what you don't like to do. Worked at lumber yards, you know, various jobs where you find out, man, I don't like to do this. But at the same time, I had no idea how people created wealth, no idea how people actually became millionaires. I just didn't really think that it was for me or an option or even being a business owner. I didn't know a single business owner except for Gino and his brother, Mark. Wow. At the time. So I just never, I didn't have exposure. It's, you know, kind of your surroundings where you grow up and whatnot. So my limiting belief was literally like, hey, I can't really own a business. Can I? I mean, really? How would I even do it? So having that mentorship from my partner, Gino, was really the game changer. I've always had a high, you know, motor of ton of energy and I'm willing to like kick in a door to make it happen. But sometimes we struggle mentally. And so many times I think real estate's 90% mental. If we're going to be honest, this shit's not rocket science. Yeah. It's not. I mean, and that's why I go back to the clarity, the buy right, manage right, and finance right. If you set your parameters up and you follow the yellow brick road, no, this is what I will buy. This is what I will not. Here's my management parameters. I want long-term debt. I want, you know, non-recourse financing. You can do that, but you have to actually believe you can do it. And that's why so many people, once they get into even maybe a 10-plex or a 20-unit complex, they start to scale up quick and get a lot of deals under their belt because they realize, holy, it is not rocket science. It's just they're held down thinking, oh, it's a pie in the sky or it's not for me. And I think many of us struggle with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And even yourself, I mean, you and your partner, you were counseled by your partner, but you ended up buying a 25 unit deal, right?
Correct.
And now what's your largest deal that you've done?
We did a 281 unit.
281.
Yeah.
So like when you did, before you did the 25 unit deal, there's no way you could have thought to yourself, hey, I could do a 250, 281.
And we didn't even syndicate it. We didn't syndicate it. It's owned by me and two of my partners. We split it up in thirds. So
it's like you went in pieces because you bought that 25 unit and that gave you the confidence to, you know, go and you saw the process, you built a process around it, and then you started to scale up and then you started to teach other people how to do it. And I'm sure you get approached all the time. I get people coming to me on Instagram and I hear it in their voice when we have, you know, sidebar, you know, phone calls. They feel like they have to start with a duplex or a fourplex. And I'm like,
or there's the other side that says, I got to get 150 units. That's all I can do because they see the Instagram and they will sacrifice not doing the smaller deal. So right. there's like two sides of that spectrum, which is crazy that people are like being shamed on, oh, I just did a 300 unit deal. Guys, I'm here to tell you, do a 10 unit, do a 300, wherever you're at, and then grow from there. Because I see people that have like this get there-itis that are like, oh man, why the hell did you just do a 50 unit deal? I'm like, cause the shit makes me money and right. and I just bought it. And it's like, so many people get like caught up in this, like, you know, Instagram entrepreneurism, go big or go home or you suck. And I'm like, dude, this is here to create a great life for my family and myself and the people that are on our team. That's what this is about. Not me sitting on the top of a Lambo saying, what up, dog? You know what
I mean? Right. Like right. I completely agree with you. You know, like, You need to at some point pull the trigger and take action. And if you could only get your mind around doing something smaller, then do that. You know, on the flip side, you know, I would say I bought a duplex for my first investment. It was 3 years ago. But after I bought it, you know, and it was a new construction duplex, so it had a year to build. But after I signed the contract, I was, you know, I'm also a business owner, and I started running the numbers, and I'm like, this is just going to take forever, right? To really build any real wealth. Well, my next deal was a 76 unit syndicated deal. And people are like, well, what do you like better? And I'm like, you know, the 76 unit all day long. But, you know, I'm not bummed out that I did the duplex because it got me in the game. You know, I may never have been able to pull the trigger on that 76 unit had I not done the first one. But,
and you get to see the process and you realize right. It's just, you're adding zeros at a certain point.
Right.
Exactly. But it gets easier though, because you bring a team with you and people have a division of labor and those roles and responsibilities. So you don't have what I call the I'm a mentality. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do everything. Look, that first deal, I messed everything up, man. I'm cutting the grass on this because, you know, I have this blue collar, you know, mentality from Rochester, thinking like, and I saw my parents, like they built their own house. My grandparents built their own house. I'm like, guess that's what you do. You just do everything yourself. And, you know, quickly, a little story. I was actually Jim Clayton, who had he sold his mobile home company to Warren Buffett, actually financed my fifth deal. And I spent the day with him.
He was your only investor?
No, he had a bank. He had Clayton. So he sold the mobile home manufacturing to Buffett. Then he rolled that money into he started Clayton Bank. And I spent the day with him. He went out, we drove the deal. And you know, I was saying to him, I said, look, you know, whatever happens here, I don't care if the leasing agent doesn't show up or, you know, the maintenance man, I will show up and do the work. You have nothing to worry about. Like, I am your safety blanket on this. And he's like, I love your energy. And we had probably 500 units at the time. He's like, I like your portfolio. He said, but that's not how you scale. And literally we're 3 years, 500 units into it or something after our first deal. And I didn't even like think of scale. I'm like, what is he talking about? And then I became just this huge student on EOS, the traction system, and then scaling up the Rockefeller habits. And Gerber, you know, the Michael Gerber stuff there. So I just started, you know, like digesting all this stuff. And we've spent over six figures on scale coaches and whatnot for our employees. But that kind of was one of these inflection points where Jim started coaching me on that stuff. And then I took it further because I realized how important our growth was going to be and the scale was going to be at that point versus just, you know, acquiring more assets and trying to, you know, bootstrap it. So.
Absolutely. So where along the way did you and Gino decide, because you had a choice at some point, you guys mm-hmm. were like, all right, we can continue to scale and just have it be, go from 500 to 1,000 to 2,000, and just have it be our own deal. We're just huge, you know, property owners. Or we could also do that, but also create all these other programs where we help other people do it. So at some point, you guys had to make that decision. Help me understand how that came about.
Yeah, and it's funny because my cousin is a marketing exec down on Madison Ave in the city. And, you know, we talk about this stuff quite frequently because he's very methodical. He's starting a podcast. He has 20 episodes recorded already. And Gino and myself just commit and figure shit out at the end of the day. And that's the God's honest truth. I remember we started writing the book. I said, listen, every morning, let's get up an hour early each. Let's write. And you do this chapter, I do that, and let's compare notes. I think it took us like 7-8 months doing that. And we were just like relentlessly disciplined. I said, hey, man, let's start a podcast. He's like, I don't even know what the hell a podcast is. Go back to jakeandgino.com and listen to our old podcasts. They're terrible. They're absolutely terrible. And if you go on, we're quite free, like usually the number one multifamily podcast on iTunes. So if you go back, it's like, we were terrible. We were absolutely terrible. We just committed. We shared, we had authenticity. We shared what we were doing and we were very transparent with folks. So it wasn't ever, hey, we're going to start this huge mentorship program and, you know, own, you know, all these units. It was just, hey, let's get a little bit better every day. And hey, this looks like a good idea. Let's take a look. We've taken the long view on everything that we've done. We know that we believe in multifamily as the vehicle and that right. We know that there's these little verticals off of it that we want to control the process more. From the beginning, I wanted to control the management. I just, you know, have a little bit of this, like, this New Yorker thing where I think everyone's going to like rip me off or whatever. I'm you know, like I don't know if it's a Myers-Briggs or whatever, but like I come up a hard D on that. Yeah. And it's like, there's that like, you know, skepticism at times. So, you know, we started managing, and then from there we started documenting our journey and sharing it with folks. We wrote the book, we started the podcast, and we got a little bit better every day. We did a live event. I don't know, it was maybe 175 people. I don't know, 4 years ago or something like that. Never did a live event before. And I was like, oh, how do we do this? I'm like, I don't know. I called up the Hilton in Knoxville. I spoke to the lady and we put the thing together. Right. We had like literally no support. We did an event a couple of years ago. We had like 20 people helping out. Right. So it's just, you know, you learn, you pivot, you grow, you get better. I think that's entrepreneurship. You test, measure, and then you apply the new changes.
That's so huge. Now, were you also getting feedback from, say, your podcast listeners and people that you were coming in contact with? Hey, we want you to do more, you know, hey, will you guys do a live event? Hey, will you, you know, write another book? You know, did that help prompt some of that stuff as well?
Not really.
No, it was just purely from you and Gino.
He was like, hey, we want to, let's do this now. And really it was just, we both of us love the vertical integration and control. So yeah. If you look, we've scaled out our mentorship program and I'm super proud of it because we focused on the fulfillment. We're not like snazzy marketers, or we're not great marketers or anything, but we have great fulfillment and great success. The Jake and Gino members have closed over 9,000 units. And wow. That's because we have very qualified coaches and we focus on our fulfillment. We have a property management group with over 50 employees. And really, what do we focus on there? The customer service. We look for, you know, high-end hospitality-like service in the C&B apartment space. We have a mortgage arm. You know, part of the core values there is literally a blue collar work ethic. It's about service and being treated how we want to be treated. So I think that you know, when it comes down to it, and I think you're, you know, alluding to like the path, and so we did our first 1,000 units before we took anyone's money, before we syndicated a deal.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, we literally just we bought extremely, you know, undervalued, mismanaged mom and pop apartments. We refinanced the proceeds and rolled into the next deal. And so we've only syndicated 3 deals in total. So, and you know, we had a lot of, and that's the one time where we had a lot of people knocking on our door saying, hey, we'd love to invest with you, you know, like friends and family members. Sure. And so the first syndicated deal we did, I think we raised them. It was 132 units. I think we raised the money in like 24 or 48 hours or something like that.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
So one of the things, So I've talked to a lot of different syndicators and also people that are looking to break into the space. And, you know, one of the advice that I give people is, you know, if you can afford to join, you know, a multifamily mentorship group, you should look to do that because you leverage off the experience of other people that have already done it and created systems and pathways. And your group is always, you know, in the mix on that discussion. And you know, you mentioned being authentic, and that's something that I've heard over and over again from people on individual calls. They're just like, you know what, the guys over at Jake and Chino, you know, they're just real people. You know,
we don't do the sugarcoat bullshit. Like, you know, that's what I was saying about like the Lambo stuff. We're not out there. Like,
right.
I live a great life. I have a beautiful home here on the lake. But I'm not like, I don't care about like a Lambo or doing this stuff. It's just not, you know, it's not who we are. So we try to, stay true to ourselves and we work. I mean, we are in it every day managing these apartments and trying to get better and put, you know, better systems in place. And even on our boot camps, we'll go to, you know, like if I was down in Dallas, I might say, hey, you know, can we get on one of your properties? We got some students coming from the day. And it's awesome because I may learn something from your management, be able to take it back and share it with our folks. So we're constantly sure. learning too. It's like, we don't know everything. But you know, I think the beautiful thing about the program is that we're constantly learning, evolving and adding to it. And therefore it's making us better. So in like a selfish kind of way, it's forced networking and learning by having to, you know, show up and do it every week. And we teach a 1-hour class every Monday at noon. So you gotta be prepared for it. So
that's awesome. So that live conference that you started a number of years ago started with 175 people. I was debating going to your conference. It was in Orlando, I think
last year,
maybe October-ish or sometime in the fall. For some reason, I had a conflict and I couldn't go, but I was...
Dude, you missed out, man. You missed out on that one.
I heard that you guys have been putting on a really good event and really good people. That's one of the attractions of these events is networking with great people. So how large has it grown to now?
So I think the last event we did was a little over 500 people. We had one of you guys down there. I don't know if you know Rick Sapio, coming out of Dallas. He's tremendous. Eric Thomas, Cole Hatter and some of these other guys that we had, not to mention our team. So it was a great time.
That's awesome. Well, I'm sure you're closed right now, right? For events or
so we haven't,
you doing so online or
we,
what are you,
we've
what are you doing
just
for
been
events?
Doing our private fulfillment events. So, when people sign up for the mentorship, we have a buy right bootcamp, we have a manage right bootcamp, we have a finance right bootcamp, and we cycle those throughout the year. So we've just been doing 100-person events just for fulfillment with the Jake and Gino members. Because the larger, like the 500-person event, the multifamily mastery that we do, we actually open that up to the public and, we bring in, a lot of different speakers as well. But these intimate, 100, person events that we do are just fulfillment with our coaches, our staff, our property management group and whatnot.
Well, hopefully 2021 we'll have that.
In a cuckoo nutty year, man.
Right, exactly. that public event again. And I would love to make it down there for it. So, tell me about the new book.
Yeah, so the honeybee, Gino and myself were big fans of the parable, The Richest Man in Babylon. And so we wanted it's phenomenal. And for us, we just love the multiple streams of income. We talked about, we got the mortgage brokerage, we got the syndication company. And we have a book that follows a sales rep, which is similar to my journey. And just dives into, going through some smaller deals, the growth, the pain, he veers off and doesn't stay in his lane at times. And it's just it's a cool story that shows people what the actual growth in story format. So it's fun, digestible, and enjoyable of a multifamily and the journey of a multifamily investor actually looks like in story format. So you can see the different inflection points, the different pain points that Noah goes through, and there's a mentor along the way who's the B-man. And I'm not going to give away too much because it's actually, it's no bullshit. There's over 100 reviews on Amazon and they're all 5-star. We don't have one below. I hope I don't get a jab for, knock on wood. We reached 100 without any negativity. So I'll leave it there.
That's awesome.
It's
fiction. It's a fictional story, but based off of your experiences in multifamily.
Loosely. And just with those different inflection points that we've experienced, so people can say, "Hey, what's coming next?" If you're at 50 units right now, what does 100 to 200 look like, and what can I do? So
I have not read it yet, but I have to get it and read it. One book that comes to mind. I don't know if you've read this book, The Alchemist.
Love it.
Alchemist. Yeah.
Paulo Coelho, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Great book. But that's like a fictional storybook, but woven in that are a bunch of life lessons. And so it sounds like your book is
definitely not as skilled as him, but I think we did a damn good job with the book. So,
fantastic. So, talk to me about your group in terms, you mentioned it, that you have like this mastermind group. And 100 people at any given point in time. How does that work? Do you invest alongside with all of your students, or do you teach them how to do it? And kind of what's involved with that class?
Yeah, so it's more of a community. I think is the best way to put it. There's a private Facebook group where we're interacting every day. We got the weekly class. We got the private events. And so it's really, it's an opportunity for people to actually build great networks. And we've seen so many people link up and do deals together. So I think that's one of the most impactful things, is that people are leveraging each other in the community for knowledge. Someone may be a deal finder. Someone may bring money to the table. Somebody may have management experience. We from the Jake and Gino standpoint, have done deals within the community. Say someone brought us a deal earlier this year. It was a 50-unit deal in Knoxville. And they said, "Hey, would love to do it. It's kind of like a weird size for management. Would you guys want to participate?" So we went in, we bought it with a group of guys, put in money, didn't take any fees or anything like that. And but we do manage it because our comfort level is there with the group that we've built out. I don't think we would do third party locally, but we do a little bit of everything, really.
What markets are you focused on?
So anything within a 3-hour radius of Knoxville right now. So we invest in a couple of the cities in Kentucky. We're in a couple of different areas in Tennessee. Would love to break into Chattanooga. We thought we just had a deal there. Tough one to break into. It seems like the few groups just kind of passing the deals to each other at times. But and then we would look at the Carolinas as well. We're real close to the Carolinas as well. And it's because of the vertical integration that we have. If something happens, we have a renovations team of about 8 or 9 guys at any given point. And so, hey, if we need to go in and do some heavy lift on one of the properties, it's a nice cost savings measure for us.
That's awesome. So your students also focused in on those markets, or are they all over the place?
All over. A ton of members in California, a ton of members in New York, and they're investing all over the place.
Awesome. Yeah. So you mentioned that they've done 9,000 units. So and you guys are at like 1,500. So obviously they're coming into the community. A lot of them are pairing up and, finding partners, and then they're going out and doing deals off on their own. But
correct.
Leveraging the experience within the community.
The framework, it comes down to the buy right, manage right, and finance right, and putting those parameters in place and creating those networks.
So talk to me about fear. Like, how does somebody looking to get into real estate, how do they jump off, and get their first deal? That fear prevents a lot of people from moving forward.
It's so real. I remember even for like the first 4 deals, I vividly remember just staying up at night, running through the numbers and getting out of bed, going opening up the laptop and looking at the underwriting 15 more times, because it's a big freaking deal, right? I mean, I blew up my 401k. I put a HELOC on my house. I blew up my Roth IRA. I borrowed money from my grandparents. Okay. I emptied out my savings account. My wife had bonds that we traded in, like everything possible. I'm an equity hound, really. And that's from not, really being huge into syndication in the beginning, I did everything that I could to get into these deals. So I think that for me, my back was against the wall. Personally, I can only speak from experience, really. I can't, say, what other people are going through, but with the layoffs that were coming every year, I needed to do something else. And I saw this as an opportunity. And I felt good because, again, my partner had experience. He had went through, different, real estate coaching at the time. So I felt like this is an opportunity. Gino had done some units and we were just looking to get a little bit bigger. So for myself, it was literally just, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen here? We started with a 25 unit. We went to a 36 unit. Then we went to 136 units. So the first 2, okay, maybe we can recover from these. Then you start getting to, 136 units, 300 units. It starts getting a little more real in terms of, wow, this could really blow you up. So it was being really hands-on with the management and just, not overpaying. And that's where that buy right comes in. Fortunately, we stayed in the same market. So we knew, or at least we thought we knew, how the deals were going to perform, what our expenses were. So the more data we were able to collect just internally, and we weren't going super wide in terms of the different markets at that point, we thought we could do pretty well. And this was, 2013. I mean, our first deal was, it was like 25 a door, something like that.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. I mean, the 136 unit, the third deal we did, we bought for 29 a door. And the rents are, on average around 800 now, and wow, they're in the 4s. So, we've refied, $2-3 million out of that thing already.
Nice. So,
and it cash flows well, very well.
One of the things you said was, what's the worst thing that can happen? I've had a number of different investors say that, because every investor I've talked to has said that they're nervous. They're scared when, before buying almost any deal, whether it be, especially the first deal, but almost any deal, they're still nervous. Like, okay, am I underwriting this correctly? Do I have it all? And nobody has 100% of the data, and you're never going to have it perfect. So yes, get educated, read books, listen to podcasts, get a mentor, talk to other investors. But at some point you have to pull the trigger, right? And
Let's talk about that for a second, though, because one of the things I feel like people that get stuck on the sidelines a lot, analyzing deals, being paralyzed, not pulling the trigger. Yeah. What I've found over time is that the equity is what really makes you rich. It's not the transactions. You know, different things come up over time, whether it's cost segregation, whether it's the different streams of revenue, whether it's rubs, whether it's like a move-in fee. Oh, I didn't realize I was going to be able to refi out and then, you know, go start using agency debt. All these things that happen from actually being an equity owner. Oh, hey, 36 months into it now, we're doing really well. In the first year, the cash flow wasn't there. Now it's maybe doubled. Like these are all things that I've gone through. And I just realized that the equity is so powerful. Even if you look at what happened here with the coronavirus, things came available. There was, PPP. Right. So for the payroll, so you had like these refundable loans that we're giving out, and then there's like different things that you could do with the SBA and things like that. So the equity is such a huge component for me, and that's what I really strive to grow personally, because I've seen it. And that's where it's at.
It's a key component for sure. There's two sides of that, right? There's people say, you know, you make your money on the buy, right? So don't overpay. But then you look, if you don't own anything, you can't take advantage of any of these things that equity owners have the ability to take advantage of, right? So,
but that's why it's being selective. It's being disciplined and working your ass off to find it. And so I was telling you about that, where people were snobbing on me on that 50 unit deal that we bought. We caught wind of it. The lead came through our Jake and Gino website. A broker said, "Hey, I may have something for you here." I was up there the next day looking at it. Okay. This was, we have 1600 units and this is a 50 unit deal that comes in. I saw the potential right away from the numbers. I got up there the next day, met with the broker. We paid cash and got the thing done. So, you know, you got to act. And a lot of people probably, if they were in my shoes, maybe wouldn't have been that aggressive on a 50 unit deal. So
absolutely. I mean, you know, people that are scaling, they're just going to keep, a lot of people are just going to have a number that they're not going to look at any deal underneath that. Mm-hmm. So talk about social media. You kind of talked a little bit about it in a negative sense of people taking pictures of next to Lambos and, you know, look at me.
No, it works. And they do a lot better.
Talk about social media and pros, cons, you know, what's your thought?
I may have been hating a little bit there. I'm just saying that's just
you were a little bit.
Yeah.
You were a little bit.
It's just, that's not our persona, if you will. Right. Sure. And I don't have like that in me to do. And while we probably could have a larger presence if we did more of that, glam type stuff, I just don't want to do it, really. It's just not in my heart and soul. So, but I think it's great. You get yourself out there. I think one of our best probably marketing, campaigns, I guess, if you will, we've done is the podcast. You know, we got out there early with it. We just let it rip. Didn't really know what we were doing. And I think it paid off great. It enables us to do live events and these different things. So, you know, we do social media. We have somebody that handles it for us and we try to just do what we're told. I'm like the biggest employee. No, I'm serious. When it comes to marketing, I try to stay true to myself and just listen to what our CMO tells us to do at the end of the day. We meet with him every Wednesday. He's like, "This is what's coming down the line." Yes, sir. I'll try to execute and get my things in when he asks for them. So,
well, I'll share a story that this is somebody that reached out to me on Instagram. We had a sidebar conversation. And this is one of the individuals that's.
I just got on Facebook 2 years ago, by the way.
Right, me too. Three years ago for me, Facebook and Instagram has been like a year and a half. But so he tells me he's looking at different groups, and he said that he talked to, I want to say it may have been Josh Rusin in your group, but in any event, he talked to somebody within your group, and they shared a story about Gino. That he was posting on Facebook or whatever. And, you know, at first he was getting a bunch of likes and then, you know, he just kept posting, but, you know, he wasn't getting as much engagement. And it was like a year and a half later, this guy calls him up and says, "Look, I've been watching you." And
I've been watching you, man. That's
I've been
creepy.
Watching you. I've been watching, you know, the success and how you guys have grown, and I want to invest with you." And that guy had not corresponded with him or done anything with him for, you know, over a year, and then reached out and then ended up connecting and investing in one of your deals. And it sounded like it was a big investor. But that's the thing, is sometimes there's people that are just trying to learn from watching, you know, you on social media. And like us, we haven't met before, right? But I read your book, right? When I first started, I've seen all the things you guys are doing. Your conference, I was going to go to your conference last year. Like, so you put yourself out there, and you put yourself out there so that you can help more people. And so that's awesome.
Plus, there's a lot of opportunities, whether you want to do a loan with us through our mortgage brokerage, Rand Capital, invest in a deal, get mentored. There's a lot of opportunities for us to work together. So you have to do it. Sometimes it is not like the marketing is not my favorite component of it, but it's, you know, you gotta be out there, right? So,
yeah. I mean, at first, when I started on Instagram, it was uncomfortable. Like, it feels, you know, braggadocious. It feels,
you feel like a teenage girl, right?
Yeah. You know, it feels bizarre, but what makes it worth it for me is when I get a call from somebody, you know, from Las Vegas or Chicago or, you know, even overseas, and we have a sidebar conversation and they're like, "Thank you so much for sharing this information, because I'm looking to break in the space." And it's a way to kind of give back and serve others and help the next guy coming up. So I like that aspect of it. Talk to me about how things have changed. I don't want to get too deep on COVID, but just, you know, how things changed for you guys based on COVID. I know you've had to shut down your live events. You're probably doing some more stuff online. What about just managing your assets?
Yeah, we shut down our multifamily mastery for 2020. That's the larger kind of open to everyone. But you know, again, we've continued. Here's a couple interesting things. I'll go off on touch on the different brands. Sure. With it. So one of the things that we found with our boot camps that we continue to do with the Jake and Gino community, fortunately for us, we operate our HQ is in Knoxville, and we've done some events in Knoxville. It's not really been shut down. People, they've had some restrictions here and there, like everywhere, but we've had some good events, and we've had people come from California or the Northeast. And it was this overwhelming positive feedback of, wow, this feels normal. When they've been coming from these places that have been completely shut down to going into a room, learning, educating, going out for drinks, whatever, after the fact. And it was like, thank God there's some places, you know, in the world that are still operating. So that was one of the most interesting things that I felt. People were almost craving for some sense of normalcy. And fortunately for us, it hasn't really, again, it's impacted everywhere. I'm not trying to say that it hasn't, but
sure,
we haven't been nearly as impacted as, say, like in New York City. And so Some of the folks, you know, we had Tim Lyons, one of the guys from up there, you know, came down, had a great conversation with him. And he, you know, we were just swapping stories. He was telling me about the craziness of, you know, people shooting fireworks and shit at cops. And I was like, man, we're just kind of hanging out here, just doing our thing. So it's like, you see a broad spectrum, but I think everyone appreciated, you know, how there was a sense of normalcy at our events. And I think that was well received. But from the property management end, the team was freaked out in the beginning. There was we have some, you know, millennials on our team, some younger folks as well. And there was a huge craving for the utmost transparency, meeting after meeting. We need to know what's going on. And for myself, I kind of like, hey, this is what we're doing. Let's go and get it done. And so I had to get out of my comfort zone in a big way. We started doing end-of-day huddles. We just more meetings than normal because people needed those touch points to feel good about things. So that was, for myself, that was very stressful. But the team did a fantastic job. We really got into the virtual leasing, you know, heavy. We stayed open. Maybe it was by appointment, maybe it was virtually, whatever the case may be. But we were able to really push through to the point where last month we actually returned to growth. So we dipped, and so that's been phenomenal. And it was just a, you know, February was the last time where it was like, oh, great month. Everyone's kicking ass. Then March hit.
Right.
And then last month was the first month that we actually returned to growth, which was just fantastic. So I was super pumped with the team, you know, for pulling that through. But yeah, it's been rough, man. I mean, it's working a lot more hours, trying to regroup, figure out new systems, how to serve people properly, how to make, you know, people feel okay about coming to work. Sure. I remember one day I just went out with the guys and I started blowing off the properties because I know a lot of the folks on the maintenance team just didn't feel good about what was going on. They're like, am I going to go into a unit and die? So I wanted to get out there and I started just blowing off properties, you know, picking grounds with everybody and said, guys, you know, we're here, we're going to do it. We're going to, you know, do it as safely as possible. So it's like little things like that we get our hands dirty, you know, when it comes down to it. And we have, you know, between the different entities, you know, 60 some odd folks that we got to take care of. When the whole thing hit, Gino and I kind of did a state of the RAND fam, if you will. And we said, look, gang, the number one thing that we're committed to right now is not laying anyone off. I said, that's number one. We all have jobs. We're going to work through this together as a family and make sure that we, you know, see this to the end. And I know a lot of people were just like kind of cut.
Right.
And so
exactly.
That I think probably was the best thing that came out of it because it gave us an opportunity to show what kind of leaders we were. And I think that helped our culture internally to this day.
I got to imagine that, you know, when you look, you know, 5 years from now and you see the loyalty that those employees still have with you, it's, you know, it's going to be looked back upon as being a very, very smart decision. So
and we've been hiring. I know a lot of people have been really, we got lean. I mean, we cut our pest control back. We were making sure that we weren't overspending, you know, and looking at different areas where we weren't just maybe doing more upgrades than normal. Cause you don't know, you need to be in right. a strong cash position. But you know, fortunately it's coming back around. So.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting because you know, like I said, I only got involved 3 years ago, and there was all the talk about even before COVID hit, you know, that we're at the tail end of the real estate cycle, and you know, multifamily is really resilient in a you know economic down cycle, and so I was, you know, I bought into all that, but I was kind of like, well, this is going to be my first downturn.
Let's really test it now, right?
and then all of a sudden, when COVID happened, I'm like, this is completely different than anything you could have ever planned for, you know, where the government actually tells you you can't evict anybody for non-payment. I mean, that's, you know, it wasn't even in anybody's mindset that could be an option. And with that, you know, a lot of properties have done pretty darn good through this process still. You know, there's been a ton of stimulus. You know, we'll see what happens kind of after the election, you know, because it'll probably
come down to the market. You know, I just read there's like 15,000 vacant apartments in New York City. And that's the thing that I say to folks right now is like the people that are going to succeed post pandemic are the folks that are in growth markets. They're in places where people want to be, where jobs are flowing to. Like you're in Dallas. I think, you know, you're going to continue to crush it. If you're in New York City right now, maybe there's buying opportunities, but I think it's going to take a minute to hit. I've seen different economists say it's going to take 10 years for the thing to rebound. So,
10 years for Manhattan? Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And that's someone's opinion. That's not like, you know, me saying it's just different economist shit that I've read.
Exactly. I mean, and Dallas has been booming. And I'm an East Coast guy. I'm originally from Connecticut, but I've been here 10 years and I don't see it slowing down here. You know, so. But so what do you do for fun outside of work?
Dude, I love to do, this is going to sound crazy. I love to like landscape. Seriously.
Do you really?
Dude, I have a little over 3 acres. Yeah, I have a little over 3 acres here on the lake. And, okay. You know, I've totally transferred. I got a mid-90s house and, you know, I've totally transformed the landscape of it. I've cut down a ton of trees. Done a lot of landscaping. And it's because during the week, it's just beep, 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 you know, constant, you know, Zoom this, you know, whatever squadcast thing. It literally is my therapy. A lot of times I'll, you know, either get the chainsaw out or something on a Saturday morning, go just put my head down for 4 to 6 hours and, you know, come in dripping with sweat. And it's like, shit, I feel better. And that's sometimes what it takes for me to reset. I just personal weirdo. You know, I love working out and
it's good for you. It's not my thing.
No, I get it.
But I can appreciate it when I drive by. I'm like, hey man, that looks really good.
Yeah. So, you know, and I guess it's a feeling of accomplishment. So, you know, that just love spending.
You've got kids too, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Just so my wife's pregnant. We got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Oh, young.
So like, yeah, like on Labor Day, for example, did a podcast with Gino, and then you know, we went out and they got these little electric cars and they were just literally ramming them into each other. You know, so like stupid stuff like that. Just like hanging out with the family, you know, having campfires, keeping it simple, working out. Nothing too crazy over here.
Awesome. Hey, if you were going to describe, I know you said that you've done most of your deals you guys have done with your own capital, but recently you've syndicated 2 or 3 deals. If there's somebody listening that, you know, they've never participated in a multifamily syndication, you know, how would you describe to that person, you know, maybe they've only invested in the stock market, whatever. How do they get involved as a passive investor? What's the best way for them?
Yeah, I think the best way for them to get involved as a passive investor is to vet the group that they're going to be working with and try
so
to.
So how do they even meet people?
No, so that's what I was going to say is like, you look at the different groups that are out there, right? And I think one of the best ways to do it would be say, hey, there's 10 groups that I'm looking at right now for whatever the case may be, just like you're shopping. This is like anything. And if I were to go out and invest passively and I was looking at different groups to vet, I would schedule calls with the different groups, start to look for alignment because it may not be a good fit for them. It may not be a good fit for you, or it may be. And then I would ask them, I'd say, hey, I want to speak to some people. You know, I want to see the results, but I also want to speak to people that have invested with you and I want to hear stories and I want to hear how it went for them. And so I think that would be, you know, the best way to do it because it's just like shopping. This is something that you're buying. So if you're going to go out and you're going to, you know, look to buy a new truck, you're going to go out, you're going to drive a Dodge, a Ford and a Chevy or something. And you're going to ask people, hey, what has your experience been? You're going to read reviews. I think it's the same thing. Going out there and trying to align yourself with a group that has a similar vision and goals that you would as an investor. So if a group goes out there, they buy, you know, apartments, flip them in 3 years and you get paid off quick and that's what you want, look at the track record and say, hey, that's the kind of deal. I want to be in more of those. Okay. Sign up for that. Or if a group holds longer and that's where your passion and desire is and you see a track record, sign up for that. You know, and I think that's the key because if your goals are not in alignment with the group that you're going with, you don't look at the track record or what they're doing, then it's probably not going to end well. And the other thing is to know where the market is right now. If they've, you know, traditionally done something but you think it's gonna be harder, maybe that's a reason not to invest with them. So, yeah,
I think that's very good advice. You know, it's different than investing in the stock market where you just, you know, go online and pick a stock symbol or a mutual fund symbol and buy the stock. In this world of syndications, you know, you have the opportunity to actually get on a call and depending on where you live, potentially meet face to face with the person putting the deals together. So, you know, reach out to those people and get to know them and make sure that they're, you know, the deals that they put together are in alignment with what you're trying to achieve. I think that's great advice. How do people get a hold of you, Jake?
Yeah, I think the best way for us is that you can get some honeybee resources, right? We got the honeybee that just came out. So you can go to jakeandgino.com/honeybee. And there we have a free download of our credibility book. I was talking about a pitch book earlier in the show, you know, when I was in my pharmaceutical time. We actually have a credibility book that helps investors network with brokers, network with bankers, network with investors. So you can get a free download of the credibility book at jakeandgino.com/honeybee. There you can get different resources, download our podcasts, and also apply to work with our team.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to reading your book. I thank you for...
Get the Audible. You know, Gino read it and he crushed it.
Did he really?
Yeah, the Audible is fantastic. He's got this late night DJ voice and he really did a good job on it. So
fantastic. Well, maybe I'll have to do that. I appreciate you coming on. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed that one. You guys will be hearing about Jake and Gino for years to come. These guys are leaders in the space and really appreciate that they put out more and more content to help the next guy. So Jake, appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. See you later.
Till next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.